please listen carefully.
Hello, 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 universe. Welcome to the Optimist Daily Update. I'm Summers McKay.
And I'm Christy Jansen, and we are part of the team behind the Optimist Daily, making solutions the news. We bring you reader-funded solutions news every day in order to change the tenor of news media, social media, and the direction of your day to one focused on solutions.
7 amazing days a week, we publish positive news stories written by award-winning journalists. I'm being so goofy today. And delivered online to your inbox and through our social channels. And now we are sharing these solutions in a commute-worthy, walk-worthy, home office-worthy, August 13th-worthy podcast. Hey there, Christy. How's it going?
Good morning, Summers. I'm just fine and dandy. I'm good. I'm sitting at my newly renovated desktop space, which has lots more room and it feels clearer somehow. There's something about clearing stuff out that releases energetic space as well. We were talking earlier about our plan to do a little bit of closet clean out. That's exactly on my list for the weekend.
Yes, Christy has inspired me for closet clean out. I am very excited for it. How's it supposed to work?
Well, I mean, of course, I'm going to be referring, if not religiously, to the Marie Kondo method, where I'm going to take everything from my closet and my drawers. I'm going to pile it on my bed. I'm going to go through and feel every single article of clothing and ask myself, does this make me happy or am I done with it? And I'm going to just be ruthless in clearing out my packed closet because I have things in there that I haven't seen since like 2002, probably, you know?
Well, it's possible that some of those things from 2002, though, will make you happy, like the pants you're wearing.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Yes. Well, these are from 2012 from my last trip to India, but I pulled out my fantastic harem pants, which, by the way, are the best thing for summertime because they're kind of pantsy, but they're not, and they're kind of skirty, but they're super cute. They're bright red.
They take your pajama leisure to a new level.
Upscale pajama leisure.
Exactly. It's like real clothes pajama leisure. I was sharing with Christy that I have also been in a releasing phase in my life and releasing things that no longer serve me. And that includes, you know, Facebook groups that I'm part of or email subscriptions that I have or even, you know, Facebook friends from past lives and past tribes that just no longer really work. And I am super excited for the closet clean out. However, I think I'm going to have to do it one drawer at a time because I don't think I have the luxury of entertaining Brennan for the amount of time required probably to clean the whole thing out. So I'm going to be a little more staged in it, but we're going to start with my pajama drawer, which is our probably most frequented drawer at this moment, and work my way through it. But I read an article about a woman who spent an entire year with just 25 pieces of clothing. And she at first thought that 25 pieces of clothing, people would notice, people, you know, they'd wear out. And at the end of that year, she realized that she just didn't actually need any more of that. So I think this grand culling of things that no longer serve us is definitely helping us prepare for whatever this next chapter is as we sort of step into the post-COVID quarantine trauma phase and into new 2020. And so like, maybe we just figure 2020 starts all over again on September 1st.
We just go back. Or maybe we figure 2020 starts all over again on January 1st. And we just have a whole do-over year. Right.
A little control alt delete on the calendar. Except for that then, if we do that, then Amelia will have to hear us all over next year being like, I can't believe it's March 2020 again. Anyway, but I'm really excited about it. And, you know, I recently purchased just like a couple dresses from Amazon, which doesn't feel good. And actually, this talks about a story that's on the Optimist Daily today, because it's not probably the most ecological way to acquire clothing. Certainly, we know it's not. But I just wanted a few things that felt like the pre-COVID, pre-pregnancy, pre-immediate post-pregnancy me. And yeah, I'm inspired. I guess I'm going to consider those like my inspiration pieces to revisit my closet.
They could be your touchstones for when you do get to the full clean out of everything. Say, exactly. Okay, I want to build my wardrobe around these three new pieces, and let's see what I'm going to keep and what am I going to get rid of.
Well, if anyone's had a lot of success cleaning out their wardrobe or lives on 25 or less items of clothing a day after having previously had a much more abundant amount of clothing, let us know. We'd love to hear your story. Again, first world problems, and we sound pretty crazy that we're complaining about having too much. So we're not complaining about that. We are instead going to release that abundance to others. And let's release some abundance to others with headlines today. Christy, do you want to kick it off? What got you going?
Of course. The headline, which grabbed my attention, it reads, Philadelphia to provide free internet for 35,000 low-income families. And this is just a tremendous solution. It underscores the super salient fact that in today's America, you absolutely need to be connected to the internet in order to function. School has gone online. A lot of work has gone online. People are buying groceries and clothes online. And that's really where so many of our transactions are now being hosted. And if you don't have a reliable internet connection, it's going to be challenging for kids in school. It's going to be challenging for people who need to apply for unemployment, for example, or there's just so many things.
Jobs.
Or apply for a job. Exactly. So having this, it really should be considered a basic utility. And this is what Philadelphia is starting to implement. And I think this is sort of the beginning of that direction that many states and cities around the country are starting to head. Hopefully we will make it a national program at some point. What they're doing is they're investing in 35,000 low-income families for the moment that currently do not have a reliable internet access, because it can be very expensive because it isn't controlled like a utility at this moment. Some areas in different cities have maybe one carrier and the connections are really outrageously expensive. Some rural areas have none.
Can I ask, what do you guys pay for internet? What's your connectivity utility bill?
My connectivity utility bill is around $90, which is not cheap because we only have one. And now with all of us working from home and doing Zoom meetings and Zoom classes, it's actually our bandwidth is starting to have some issues. I don't know if it's our modem that's starting to go or if we need to upgrade it. We only have one option, I think, in the area that I'm in. You know, I'm fortunate enough I can afford that, even if it's a stretch sometimes. But there's other families, even in our city, that really don't have that. And when you are trying to figure out if you're going to pay your rent or your food, you're not going to pay internet. It takes a whole bunch of kids out of the ability to do their online schooling. And so under this plan, which is going to cost about $17 million, and it's being paid for with a mixture of philanthropic money, school funding, and also local CARES Act funding, there's going to be some households which are actually wired for free broadband access via a Comcast program. And other families will also receive, or instead receive, no charge wireless hotspots, which are going to be hosted by T-Mobile. I think it's an interesting space to see how it develops between wireless carriers, AT&T, T-Mobile. I think they are starting some programs where they're doing backup internet that's transmitted wirelessly compared to hardline connections. It'll develop in some way, but the U.S. is far behind most other modern economies in terms of broadband connectivity and just ubiquitousness of that because of the emphasis on private ownership for something which really should be considered a public access. It's like a public highway, really.
Yeah. I was just looking at what our monthly is for our internet. So we have internet, we have home phone because we don't have good wireless here. And then we do have sort of broadcasty television. We pay $140 a month. You know, it's a family of five and I work full time from home, and we had upgraded to the highest bandwidth possible because while I was pregnant, remember, I worked from home, right? But I think about the fact that that $140 a month it's an absurd amount of money. And we also are very limited here in my area. There's not a lot of options. You know, we have Spectrum and DirecTV are pretty much it. And DirecTV was incredibly cost prohibitive and required you have all like the television channels. Mm-hmm. So this is such a honest way for us to acknowledge disparities in America. And anyone who struggles with understanding what social justice or what creating equitable platforms might be, it's this. I'm really, really proud of Philly for taking this on. This solution is a fantastic one. I think you ubiquitous high-speed internet is a must for the future, and ubiquitous high-speed cost-effective internet is a requirement. And yeah. This is how our world is going to look in 2021 or 2020 redux.
If you think about it, Summers, I mean, the way that we electrified the nation was in the wake of the Depression in mm-hmm. the 30s. And that yep. was part of the, quote, the Build Back to Better that Franklin Delano Roosevelt instituted with his New Deal kinds of programs. But one of the programs that he did focus on was getting the electrical service to everywhere, making electricity ubiquitous in the United States. And other than some of the Indian reservations, which we've talked about here, it did mm-hmm. become ubiquitous in the United States, at least basic electrical service. So now we need at least basic internet service, whether it's subsidized or however we do it, we have to get that done. I think enough about the internet, which we both agree is a great solution and an advance forward. But I think you've got another interesting solution you wanted to focus on. What are you looking at today, Summers?
I do indeed. So let's talk desalinization. My headline reads, new reusable material makes saltwater drinkable in just 30 minutes. Scalable desal's really important. And what desalinization is really simply is that it removes the salt from saltwater so that it is drinkable, potable water. And it has been a huge challenge to have a scalable, economical way to access our largest, most ubiquitous water source in the world and turn it into potable water. Well, there is a new process that turns this water into a drinkable resource and could eliminate water shortages in many areas of the globe. The study has found that success in desal using a material called metal organic framework, MOF. Basically what it is, it's extremely porous metal that can spread out to cover large surfaces of area, and it can be used effectively to trap salts and impurities in brackish water and seawater. What we see about a lot of these different technologies is that they are very cumbersome, they're very expensive, they don't produce huge amounts of water, but an MOF is able to produce as much as 139.5 liters or 36.9 gallons of fresh water per kilogram of material each day. And then it can be easily cleaned for reuse simply by placing it in sunlight. So you ask, all right, how much water are we supposed to be drinking a day? You know, there's a lot of different opinions on how much water you should drink every day. I start every day with at least 18 ounces of water just before I put anything else in my body. But health authorities generally recommend 8 8-ounce glasses, which is about 2 liters or half a gallon. So if we look at this, then basically a kilogram of this material is producing potable water for almost 80 people a day. I am just really excited about this. I know you have a lot of experience of having to use desal while sailing around the world. What are your thoughts on this?
A couple things. One, I just want to point out that while drinking a half gallon is what's recommended, people use fresh water for cooking, also for bathing and cleaning and other things. So I don't know what the actual average use per person is a day, but I think it's closer to like 2 to 5 gallons is baseline what you really need to have a comfortable life, right? Yes. With fresh water. And the reason this is super important is that fresh water resources are very constrained around the world. I think last year, maybe the year before, the whole city of Cape Town in South Africa ran out of fresh water. Mm-hmm. That's a coastal town. If they had a cost-effective desalination program, they wouldn't have to worry so much about running out of fresh water. But this is certainly a big issue. It's something that we think about here in coastal California, where we have drought and we've experienced extended periods of drought. I expect us to have to deal with drought again in the future. And we had that whole gold is the new green when we were talking about watering our lawns or not watering our lawns, you know?
Right.
So I think this is great. Yes, I was telling you that I am starting to read a friend of mine who was part of my sailing adventure tribe when I was growing up, has just finished his first draft of a memoir from when we were first sailing, you know, around the world. And back then we didn't have a desalination system on the boat in the very beginning. We could only carry about 500 gallons of fresh water, which was reserved for cooking and drinking. Mm-hmm. And we did our dishes in salt water. We bathed in salt water. You know, we were doing everything in salt water until we were able to afford a desalination system, which is important for when you're traveling in the ocean. Anyway, I just think this is a very exciting advancement. We'll have to see how it develops. And the issue is you have to have it be energy efficient and cost efficient in order for it to really make sense and be scalable. And it seems like this one is potentially a scalable and cost efficient method.
Well, we've got some other fabulous headlines, as always, on the Optimist Daily, including, and I was surprised Christy didn't talk about this story, but sometimes we have to do something different. But in the future, your EV's electricity could pay for your parking. We also have a Indian company tackling taboo by introducing paid leave for periods.
How Which is to fine, send- but I mean, most of the time you can work when you're having your period.
In the Western world, when we have our period, we have tampons, we have pads, we have multiple sets of underwear. We have period safety here in developed countries, right? And so in certain areas around the world where children, oftentimes teenage girls, early pubescent girls, don't go to school during their period because they don't have access to period sanitation products. And so even though, yes, you can certainly work when you have your period, the option of allowing 10 days of period leave a year is a bold move in India, where 71% of young women remain unaware of menstruation until their first cycle. So this is not just about taking time off when you have cramps. It is about like acknowledging and addressing period security.
And I think it's super important and, you know, different cultural practices and sensibilities around menstruation is great. The thing that I just was reacting to, my reactive moment, was I don't like it when we have to medicalize or pathologize natural body functions for anybody. I mean, totally. Ideally, we could just accept that women's bodies are just normal bodies and not make it into a medical conversation. Menstrual leave, I think it probably has a lot to do with the local cultures also that are thinking about this.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
Yeah, it's complex and we need to do an entire show on period poverty and period
and period abundance.
Exactly. Period poverty and period abundance. Exactly. Like we have super abundant period tools here. Editors, go find a whole bunch of companies that are dealing with period poverty as well as products that are sustainable for periods. And let's do a period week on the Optimist Daily. Let me keep reeling them through here. Other headlines, how to study most effectively according to cognitive research. Redesigning playgrounds leads to healthier kids. And what else do we have? What are our last few?
Well, then there's an article about Bogota pedaling towards a bike-centered transportation future. And that's a helpful story. The story you mentioned about fabrics, learning your fabric, which textiles are friendliest to the environment. And designers have repurposed architectural mock-ups into useful community structures. Oh, and there's one more. The sustainable water taxi that's designed to get you across rivers in no time. And we like this as well. It's a very cool solution. Go look at the Optimist Daily Today's Solutions for all these headlines. And thank you, everybody, for listening to the Optimist Daily Update. We promise to continue to share positive, solution-based stories with ideas on how you can participate in this changing world and ensure it is changed for the good. And we promise to cover current events with accuracy, legitimate sources, and offer you the information you need most to chart new paths for all of us.
Everybody, you know what I'm going to say next? Because I say it every day. Please consider becoming an emissary on theoptimistdaily.com and for just $5 a month, support reader-funded independent journalism. Be part of the solution, changing consciousness and addressing our world's biggest challenges with a problem-solving mindset. Let's keep the Optimist Daily free to all who need it, supported by those who can. Thanks, everybody. Have a fantastic rest of your day.